Wondery Plus subscribers can binge new seasons of American Scandal early and ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. From Wondery, I'm Lindsey Graham, and this is American Scandal. Today, we wrap up our series on the Unabomber. Between 1978 and 1995, Ted Kaczynski led a campaign to stop the advance of modern technology. Kaczynski was a former math professor, and as an undergrad at Harvard, his life was profoundly changed after he took part in a brutal psychological experiment. Kaczynski was left bitter and bent on getting revenge at scientists and those he believed were advancing technology. So he began mailing and planting bombs across the country. This campaign would kill three people and injure many more. He was known by the FBI as the Unabomber, and the manhunt to find him lasted nearly two decades. It would become the longest and most expensive case in FBI history. The publication of Kaczynski's manifesto in 1995 led to a break in the case when Kaczynski's brother, David, noticed similarities between the manifesto and his brother's letters. Soon, agents arrested Kaczynski in his cabin in rural Montana. The Unabomber case was a milestone for the FBI, but Kaczynski also had a large influence across American culture. His manifesto, titled Industrial Society and Its Future, featured a scathing critique of science and technology. Kaczynski argued that industrial life was destroying the human spirit and the planet. It was an argument that gained traction with a variety of movements, including radical environmentalists and those who reject civilization. Today, I'm speaking with John H. Richardson, a journalist and author who's written about those movements. While working on a story about environmental activists, he also began exchanging letters with Ted Kaczynski himself. We'll talk about Kaczynski, his vision of a perfect world, and how his message might still resonate today. That's next. American Scandal is sponsored by Audible. I get the thrill of, say, skydiving, but it's a lot of work and expense for something that lasts only minutes and comes with some safety concerns. Instead, I get my thrills in a lower dose, stretched out over hours with a good mystery. Like in the Penguin modern classic Perfume, The Story of a Murderer by Patrick Susskind. And as an Audible member, I can choose one title every month to keep forever from the entire catalog of classics, bestsellers, new releases, and Audible originals ready to listen whenever, wherever on the Audible app. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/AS or text AS to 500-500. That's audible.com/AS or text AS to 500-500. American Scandal is sponsored by True Green. This is a true story. Right now, fertilizer is spilled all over my garage, and the fertilizer spreader has lost a wheel. While I'm usually pretty DIY, some things I leave to professionals. True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to a beautiful lawn. You water and mow, they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. So you do you and let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed. John Richardson, welcome to American Scandal.
Good to be here.
Let's start with Kaczynski's manifesto. It's 35,000 words long, and in it, Kaczynski focuses on two main ideas. I was wondering if you could tell us what they are.
Well, basically, that technology is uncontrollable because it's too large a system to be controlled by any entity or governing body or anything like that. And it's really in control of the world rather than us making the decisions, driving things forward, whether we want it to or not. And that it's going to be a disaster for humanity and that it should be stopped.
35,000 words is a long time to spend on just those two or three points. How far into detail did he get?
Well, I mean, he talks about organizing and ideas of primitive life and a lot of different aspects of the critique. He talks about how technology and civilization, in his opinion, causes psychological illnesses and makes people, as he calls it, feral. He talks about the difference between left and right and how they fall into the spectrum of his analysis. I mean, he goes into a lot of subjects. The history of anti-technology he glosses into a little bit. He's certainly not the first person who's had these ideas. But basically, the thing that distinguishes his book is that it calls for revolution and something to actually be done about it rather than just being a social analysis as other scholars and thinkers have done over the last couple centuries.
Well, if we presume that revolution does come, did Kaczynski have any cohesive vision of his utopia? What would it look like to live in the world he wanted to see?
He talks about primitive life as a sort of hunter-gatherer kind of ideal, but I'm not sure that that's something that he particularly posits as something that would be pleasant. And he doesn't seem all that interested in exactly how anti-civilization would be constructed after some kind of collapse. He's really more interested, I think, in the critique of how technology, in his opinion, both makes us helpless, robs us of agency, and is getting larger and larger and more destructive. That's the critique he's more interested in, I think, than what life should look like.
I find that surprising, given that we all know Ted Kaczynski because of his acts of violence in order to enact a revolution.
Well, I mean, this is just my opinion, but I think that he reacted to the incursion of roads and housing and cabins and stuff like that into his wilderness in a very emotional and angry way. He says himself, his reaction was wanting revenge. Some people say that he came up with the philosophy later to justify his killings. In my opinion, I mean, he obviously had those kinds of anti-civilization ideas because he went to live in the woods in the first place. And I think it was a combination of emotional and reaction mixed with a growing political conviction that civilization was the enemy. Now, if you look at his thoughts about revolution that he's written, this is not consistent with killing people randomly. That's not a tactically effective thing to do. It never has been, particularly unless you just want to cause chaos. So his acts are not consistent with that more, you know, what you might call, if you wanted to, mature philosophy, where he does the whole social critique that sort of puts his acts in context, I guess.
Well, let's stick with a manifesto. In 1995, it was published in the Washington Post and reached an international audience. Do you have an idea of what the public reaction was to his ideas?
Well, at the time, I mean, there was the popular reaction, which was weird hermit killer. And there was a more sort of a counterculture of Ted for president campaign. Then there was a sort of some serious academic critiques looking at it by people in places like the New York Times, by important physicists and technologists, and have been all ever since. So I think all of those are sort of completely different Ted Kaczynskis.
Could we characterize those that took the manifesto seriously as a sort of following?
Well, I think there's definitely been people who have been seen him as a inspiring figure or sympathetic or of the similar mind. So definitely, I mean, in Foreign Policy magazine a couple of years ago, they argued that there were a couple thousand committed, ready for revolution, anti-civ people in the U.S. I have no idea whether that's right. And, there have been consistently groups overseas making the same claims, some who explicitly are Kaczynski inspired. But I wouldn't overstate it. I don't think there's any kind of revolutionary army out there waiting to make an attack. And most people who are anti-civ these days are aware of Kaczynski, but are not necessarily directly, you know, acolytes of him. I mean, few people would admit to that.
Well, you have an interesting relationship with Kaczynski yourself. In 2016, you wrote to him. He was still in a supermax prison in Colorado, serving concurrent life sentences.
Where he remains.
Yes, where he remains. Why did you reach out to him?
I'd been covering climate change stories for Esquire magazine for a few years. And during the course of that, I became aware of people who had sort of given up hope that there would ever be any effective global action against it. And when you start to look at those people, you end up stumbling across the Kaczynskiites, because it's sort of like, we told you so. So I started looking at that, and it reminded me of somebody I had met a decade before who had espoused those ideas. And so that intrigued me, I guess, the connection with the actual person I knew and liked. So I just started interviewing people, as a reporter does, thinking maybe there was a story there. And eventually I ended up writing to him.
American Scandal is sponsored by BetterHelp. I'm an introvert when there's not a microphone in front of me. People drain me. Even the smallest interactions, like ordering a pizza or calling a plumber, are taxing. And I know I avoid socializing sometimes because it's just so tiresome. But it's also delightful, a connection I crave, and that's a conundrum I'm still working on. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you need more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. And as the world's largest therapy service, BetterHelp has matched 3 million people with professionally licensed and vetted therapists available 100% online. Plus, it's affordable. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to match with a therapist. If things aren't clicking, you can easily switch to a new therapist anytime. It couldn't be simpler. No waiting rooms, no traffic, no endless search for a therapist. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/AS today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/AS.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
For most people who perhaps are not reporters, it's not a natural course of things to reach out to a mass murderer. How did that feel?
Well, I've done killers and gang stories before. I was a crime reporter for a while. It's not that far out of what I would normally do. I did a story where I spent a week with a hitman from the Sinaloa cartel. I mean, that's what you do.
Well, in this instance, what did you talk about? Where did the conversation go?
Gee, it's been a long time since the beginning. I mean, first I was just saying I was interested in doing a story about him and his followers and his ideas and all of that. And he was dismissive and a bit contemptuous of my magazine. But he was pretty funny about it. He quoted Paul Goodman. He said, "As I understand it, Esquire is a magazine that goes around and around and ends up coming up with no real point in its articles." So we batted that one around for a couple letters and basically tried to I tried to get him to continue writing and respond and play it out. And he's, like I said, dismissive. He's very sort of aloof in a lot of ways, certainly at first. And then and I just kept trying.
Well, I can imagine anyone in Kaczynski's place, and certainly of his temperament, being aloof and dismissive of the press. But like you said, you kept at it. Did you gain any notion of Kaczynski as a person, as perhaps the relationship warmed?
Well, I mean, he definitely has a sense of humor. He's funny in an acerbic kind of English prep school way. He's very scholarly. I mean, his letters have footnotes and citations and page references to my letters or to whoever he's writing to. He tends to be cool temperament. If you've read his book, you know, he is a mathematician. He tends to be sort of hyper-rational. It's kind of like being with a guy in college who's really smart and you're batting things around and he's sort of snotty and superior and makes you work for your end of the conversation.
Did you get any feeling that he enjoyed writing you?
There were times when he said things that were not just in the course of response or all of that. I mean, we talked about music and boats, things that were off topic, sort of about revolution and technology, although it always sort of crept in there. And when sometimes he could get quite antic and sort of like boyishly wanting to have fun with it, like language-like, you know, playing with language, playing with fanciful concepts about adventure. I mean, I don't know. It was kind of unexpected. You never know what a person is really like, and people can create personas in letters, but he seemed to me, you know, not really much different than anyone else that you would be corresponding with, except for the notoriety of his case and the peculiarity of his intellect.
I suppose it was inevitable that the two of you spent some time discussing politics and the idea of political revolution. Certainly, 2020 has been a year fraught with charged politics. Did Kaczynski have anything to say about the current moment?
Well, he's not a big admirer of Trump, and I sort of spoke of his administration as grifters and thieves. Those are not his exact words. He once said that if he had been able to vote in 2016, he would have voted for Hillary, which I thought was kind of funny. I think that although he devotes a lot of time to hating liberals, or leftists rather, in his manifesto, his sympathies are probably more in that direction than with conservatives. At least today's version. He's very interested in developments in technology and stuff like that. That's one of the ways that I got his interest, I guess, is I would write to him about developments in data mining and surveillance technology and things like that.
Yeah, certainly since he was arrested, quite a few things on the technological horizon have changed. Social media appeared and advanced artificial intelligence. Did this just confirm his suspicions?
Oh, no, yeah. No, and actually, if you look at the manifesto again, there's a surprising amount of stuff that really does seem prophetic. He talks about those kinds of technological surveillance, military robot-type developments, genetic engineering. It was a big concern for him, the idea of designer babies, and just a general, you know, more and more departure from the natural world. I had done some pieces on computer algorithms and robots, and so I think he's interested in that stuff, and we were able to talk about it.
One thing that's probably not changed much in his time in prison is his actual accommodations. He's used to small, cramped quarters, but how has he found prison?
You know, he's not the kind of person who complains about physical discomforts or anything like that. I tried to sympathize with him once because I had read an article about conditions there, and it said that it was terribly cruel because it was designed so that prisoners could never see the sun in maximum security. And so I said, yeah, I read that. That's terrible. What a horrible situation, especially for you. And he wrote back and he said, you're a journalist and you believe everything you read. What an idiot. I can see the sky. And then he gave me a little lecture on the different cell blocks and what the rules were, all of that. So he's not looking for sympathy. He's sort of an honest broker in that regard. He mostly seems very frustrated about time, research materials, ability to correspond as much as he would like, and stuff like that. Often when I write to him, he says he has very little time to respond, or he's working hard to get something done. He's writing another book or something like that.
In all these years, did you get any feeling that his time in incarceration has changed his views about his manifesto, his mission, or his crimes?
I mean, he's not the kind of person who would reveal that necessarily. If he has any remorse about his killings, I don't think he would say so, because it would be like an unseemly reach for sympathy or something like that. I don't think he would want to play that card.
When you choose Organic Valley, not only will you be enjoying great-tasting dairy, you'll help to save over 1,600 small organic family farms who are protecting over 400,000 acres of organic farmland and all the plants and animals that call it home. This is dairy you can feel good about. It's great-tasting, high-quality organic dairy, ethically sourced from small organic family farms. To find Organic Valley Dairy near you, visit ov.coop. That's ov.coop.
Looking to instantly upgrade your Mother's Day gift from typical to meaningful? Shop Etsy. Get up to 30% off well-crafted and personalized gifts from participating shops until May 12th. This year, embrace your creative side. You know, the side your mom gave you. And shop Etsy for custom jewelry, style pieces, home decor, and extra special items she'll adore. Need something original and affordable for Mother's Day? Etsy has it. Shop until May 12th for up to 30% off gifts for mom. Terms apply.
In your writing, you pointed out that Kaczynski's papers are a popular attraction at a University of Michigan archive. Who is still interested in Kaczynski's ideas there?
Well, you know, there's a lot of people on Facebook, lots of weird groups that reference Kaczynski, and it's hard to say how many people are involved, although some of them get, I saw one with 100,000 hits. Again, as I said, there's a lot of people who are very Kaczynski-esque, who deny or disavow or just won't talk about Kaczynski, in the sense that there's that sort of potent valence around him that suggests to me that he's on people's minds if they keep saying he's not on their minds. But there's also, like, explicitly, there's, you know, a terrorist group in Latin America, and there's groups who are more active in the U.S. who aren't committing violence, but who might be in favor of it, who are, you know, using his name or referencing him because it's so explosive, you know, practically quote him in their own works. I think there are people who are trying to live off-grid, which is sort of an overlap with preppers. There's people who are sort of doing legal thinking. There's people who are fighting pipelines and sympathetic but have more immediate environmental concerns. It's, you know, it's a big spectrum. But it's irrelevant in a way to say, are they Kaczynski inspired? Because in a way, that's just saying, are these people associated with this person with this troublesome reputation? But the overlap of ideas, the critique of technology, the desire for revolution, things that he put together in one explicit very forceful package for the first time, I think, have been are being mirrored by contemporary thinkers.
Sure, I think that's a fair point, that a confluence of ideas, a similarity of ideas, does not indicate an endorsement of Kaczynski. But, you know, in 2018, you wrote an article in New York Magazine about a generation of people who have been influenced by Kaczynski, and you you coined a term, Kaczynski moments. What do you mean by that?
Well, I was thinking of a couple of things. One was a young man I'd met who told me about reading the manifesto for the first time, and it was, the cover had been torn off. He didn't know what it was. He just started reading it as an innocent person who was interested in anarchist ideas and all of that. He was sympathetic to the general concept. And he got a little while ways in, and he thought, this is, like, brilliant. It's genius. And he got a little farther in, and he figured out, oh, my God, this must be Ted Kaczynski. And it was a shock. And I think that's really why I wrote the story, because I saw that shock replicated on other people. There's a famous essay by Bill Joy, the founder of Sun Microsystems, I think. And he knew a person who had been wounded by one of Kaczynski's bombs, but ended up somehow having that same experience where somebody handed him some Kaczynski writings from the manifesto. And he said, wow, this is completely right. And then turned the page and saw Kaczynski's name and felt this shock. Like, how could I agree with this killer? And that sort of just really caught my imagination. And I think it's, I guess, because it stands for this sort of shock that comes when you realize how climate change is seems uncontrollable by the systems designed by man.
I think I'd be captivated, too, in these Kaczynski moments, these times in which people find themselves horrified to agree with the thoughts of a murderer. So there is this difference, this divide between Kaczynski, the murdering hermit, and Kaczynski, the thinker. But Kaczynski wanted a revolution. Still, revolutions are pretty rare things, even though radical thought, you know, has brought them about in the U.S., in France, Russia, China. Kaczynski is not a Jefferson or a Robespierre, a Lenin or a Mao. So how influential in his thinking was Kaczynski really?
Well, I mean, it's clearly, you know, the overwhelming majority of humanity has zero interest in his thoughts. My sense has always been that when there are subterranean things happening in the culture that haven't really been out in the clear yet, it's sort of stewing away in people's minds in inchoate and not very well worked out ways. And I think it tends to be people who aren't, like, super well attached to normal life, conventional life, who tend to sort of receive what is happening in the culture, these unsaid things. I think that it goes throughout history. People who are sort of prophets and visionaries are not necessarily the normal guy who shows up to the office at 8 a.m., you know? So I'm interested in phenomenons of different thinking, you know, canaries in the coal mine kind of thing. And so looking at what is undeniably a huge growth in sort of all sorts of varieties of not anti, but a-civilizational things, like these primitive life gatherings that have really gone from a few in the 80s to hundreds now, the whole prepper movement, all the various forms of simplicity and wellness and back to the land and a living light on the earth and all of that. There's a lot of that kind of thinking growing, and some of it is more radical than others. In other countries where they have more radical, more alive radical traditions, there is violence and bombings and murders with a strong anti-civ message and sometimes a explicitly Kaczynski-ish message. Also, I mean, the idea that there's a couple thousand of them in the States, you know, as a point Dr. Kaczynski makes often is that the Russian Revolution was accomplished by 6,000 Bolsheviks. What Kaczynski's practical advice has come down to is wait for the right moment and hit a critical point in the infrastructure or the system, and you might be able to create a chain effect that brings down the system.
So we return, I guess, to this tension that Ted Kaczynski, the thinker, might have had something that we should pay attention to. But Ted Kaczynski, the activist, the revolutionary, is someone we should rightfully revile.
No, I wouldn't go that far. I think the feelings you may have about the judgments we may have and I may have about his behavior are kind of irrelevant to what the disturbance that he felt, which is being felt, I think, by many more people as climate change and ocean acidification and species extinctions accelerate. So he was an extraordinarily rational man who was like so rational that he went over the edge and said he looked at what was happening in the history of technology and how it had grown and efforts to control it and scientific ethics and what they've done over the years. And he said, this is just going to get worse until it all falls apart. And he wrote that in the 90s, as other people were warning as far back as a century. But when you see that he was so disturbed at that time and you see that a lot of the things that he's predicted are coming true and that other people are being disturbed by them, the question isn't whether how we feel about Ted Kaczynski. The question is, what are we going to do about the Ted Kaczynskis that are going to come? Because his reaction is not like one of a kind. I've always felt that when things start getting bad and people connect it, the wildfires and the flooding and everything else, there's going to be a lot of people who become unhinged, and a lot of them are going to become unhinged in that way because that model exists, even whether it has his name attached to it or not. He's more like a case study in a way than to talk about right and wrong or anything else.
John Richardson, thank you for speaking with me today.
Well, thanks for having me.
That was my conversation with John H. Richardson, a journalist and author of the book, My Father, the Spy. Next, on American Scandal, we bring you an encore presentation of our series on the Iran-Contra affair. In the 1980s, Washington, D.C. was hit with a sensational scandal. Stories began to emerge about illegal weapon sales abroad and an attempted international coup. And as the scandal unfolded, it would threaten the presidency of Ronald Reagan and lead to a high-stakes showdown with a special prosecutor. From Wondery, this is episode 5 of 5 of The Unabomber from American Scandal. In our next series, in the 1980s, Washington, D.C. was hit with a sensational scandal. Stories emerged about illegal weapon sales abroad and an attempted international coup. It would come to be known as the Iran-Contra affair. But as the scandal unfolded, fingers pointed to the very top, reaching into the Oval Office of the White House. This episode contains reenactments and dramatized details. And while in most cases we can't know exactly what was said, all our dramatizations are based on historical research. American Scandal is hosted, edited, and executive produced by me, Lindsey Graham, for Airship. Audio editing by Molly Bach. This episode was produced by Susan Vallett. Our senior producer is Gabe Ribbon. Executive producers are Stephanie Jens, Jenny Lauer-Beckman, and Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
Pete Rose logged more hits in baseball history than anyone else. No one has come close to breaking his record. But he was also at the center of one of the game's biggest scandals, a scandal that changed baseball forever. In the new book, Charlie Hustle, New York Times bestselling author Keith O'Brien chronicles Pete Rose's spectacular rise and fall. Drawing on firsthand interviews with Rose himself and his associates, this is Pete Rose as we've never seen him before. Buy Charlie Hustle, available wherever books are sold.